London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK, London's premier forum for news, views, and up-to-date information. Here's Andy Udman.
This is your captain speaking. Fasten your seatbelts. There is going to be turbulence. Of course, you know that. It happens every Thursday when Pam Colleen joins us. And what she's been doing lately is bringing in friends who've made a reputation for themselves around the world. Believe me, folks, you got free admission this morning, but it is going to be a four-coupon ride. We'll get your coupons later. We're going to talk about nutrition this morning from a most unlikely source. World-renowned expert on bodybuilding, Pam Colleen, you lead me where angels fear to tread every Thursday, and yet every Thursday we survive.
Yeah, every week we survive.
Here we go again. Pam Colleen, I should mention, again, is a recovering vegetarian. Wait a minute, Andy, I don't understand what you just said. A recovering vegetarian, what does that mean? And you've brought along a guest who's also a recovering vegetarian and a bodybuilder. Pam, sort this out for us.
Well, you know, we have to band together out here because the misinformation is just so thick. You know, when you turn on the news or read the paper today, you know, it's all about low fat, low fat, low fat. And, you know, where I come from is that, you know, we are really the minority. The people of in North America, around the world, who have figured out that the low-fat message is really dangerous. It's a very dangerous message that we need to band together and actually help people solve this confusion in and around animal fats, because people are nutritionally confused. And when you hear in mainstream media all the time that, you know, low-fat is the way to go, you know, we see a lot of unhealthy people as a consequence of that. But slowly but surely, many of us are learning that we need our animal fats in our diet, that animal fats indeed are key to our both physical and mental health. And I really respect Randy Roach because he too, you know, he's experimented with a lot of diets. He's a world-renowned authority on the history of bodybuilding. He's written his first book called Muscle Smoke and Mirrors, which is several hundred pages long, and he's going to be writing two more volumes of this book. It's going to be a three-volume series about the history of bodybuilding. And within that history, of course, he talks about nutrition.
So here's a world-renowned expert on bodybuilding, mm-hmm. and he's going to talk to us about nutrition.
Yes. That's one of the main focuses of what he does. He works with the everyday person to help basically help them get over their confusion around nutrition, get over their fear of animal fat, get over their fear of eggs and red meat and all these nutrient-dense traditional foods.
Well, we want to stress right off the top that this is not a bodybuilding session. This is not a how-to for wannabe Arnold Schwarzenegger wannabes, although there are a few fewer of those than there were, say, a month or two ago, but that's another issue. Anyway, let's introduce Randy and let the games begin. Randy, appreciate you joining us this morning.
Oh, no problem, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm still working on sorting this out. A bodybuilder, a world-renowned bodybuilder, has written this book. I love the title, Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. Let's look at the, Randy, let's look at this as a full meal since we're going to be talking about nutrition. Give us some juicy appetizers when it comes to the, this whole topic of nutritional confusion and people aren't sure what they should eat, and what they shouldn't eat. Let the games begin. Randy, you're on.
Well, it's kind of funny, making it sound like with bodybuilding and nutrition is kind of like a contradiction in terms. But believe it or not, probably the best health and nutritional information dispensed in the first 50 years of the 20th century came from the bodybuilding magazine. It was a different thing at that time before supplements and drugs came in and really altered the and politics. A lot of politics came in and altered the game.
Randy, before we get too deep into this, just give us a snapshot, because Pam's given us a few, and she brought along a number of guests. Who've looked at where we are right now when it comes to supplements, when it comes to drugs, big pharma, the quality of the food we eat. How healthy are we? What about this disastrous path we're on, according to some, when it comes to what we're eating and what we're not eating? Where are we on all of that, Randy?
We're hanging in. It's probably a testimonial today as how resilient we are. But there's a history and there's an evolution just in the 20th century especially coming through the mid-century, of a lot of politics that were at play and a lot of things that happened politically that altered the landscape of our diet to the Western world. And as I mentioned, the bodybuilders for the first 50 years were it was all predicated on whole natural foods.
I want to stress again that this is not a session for bodybuilders. Just in the last few days, Randy, we have heard some absolutely shocking and alarming figures about how fat our kids are. In fact, there was even for two or three days, all I could hear on talk radio across North America was this suggestion that this problem is so serious, so many of our kids are fat, that it's time to take the most obese of our children to really yank them out of their homes they're in. Let's start right there. This whole problem of children and what they're eating and how unfit they are and how they're on a fast track to an early death. How serious is all of that? What's real and what isn't?
Yeah, that's a pretty good switch of gears there. Again, the obesity in the young kids today, it's a late 20th century phenomenon. It didn't exist. You look at any photographs of the, I said, the first 50, 75 years of the century, you didn't see those fat kids. You're only seeing them now. So obviously something's changed, and that's the diets that we eat. And it began primarily in the early 80s when we shifted to a moderate to high-fat diet, especially animal fats, to a low-fat diet and exaggerated amounts of carbohydrates.
And now, what can we learn, though, from your historical research that you've done with regards to some of the founding fathers in the fitness industry?
They were healthy when their diets were predicated on animal fats. It was meat, it was cream, it was milk, it was lard, tallow, eggs, olive oil. Their diet was heavily... The model, there were two models basically moving through the 20th century in bodybuilding. One I call the high fat protein moderate carbohydrate, and the other one was in fact a lacto vegetarian base, but it's very, very rare. I had to talk about it because some of them did use it, but it was primarily high fats and proteins with moderate carbohydrates. And even as late as 1975, Lou Ravel was writing in his bodybuilding book, "Eat Fat, Grow Slim."
Mm-hmm.
I was at a restaurant recently, just to dramatize this point in a small way, and I had a coffee, and they brought a bowl of little creamers. Some of them were 2%, some of them were 10%, and some of them were 18%. Randy, which one of those do you take in your coffee?
Well, number one, I don't drink coffee. Number two, I probably wouldn't use any of those creams, but if I'm going to have cream, it's going to be raw, and it's going to be full. It's going to be a high percentage butter fat.
Yeah, I get my raw milk from a local farmer, and of course it's 50% cream and 50% milk, so I can reduce the sugar or lactose content.
Well, this discussion leads in so many discussions, but Pam just mentioned the whole issue of raw milk. Just to dramatize what you're saying, raw milk, unpasteurized from the farm, from the Michael Schmitz of the world, that's where we should be at. That's what Andy Udman drank when he was a kid. I mean, he was raised on a dairy farm, and you got it straight from the cow, you cooled it off, and you drank it. There was no processing, and you know what? He not only survived, he grew to be 6'3". And yet today, Randy, I mean, people like Pam talk about drinking unpasteurized milk. Somebody's ready to call the nutrition police and arrest you.
That's politics at play and fear-mongering. Again, the food supply is being globalized and internationalized. And to do that, you have to sterilize it. And to sterilize it, you have to carry an ongoing scare campaign that germs will kill you.
We have to take a short break in just a moment, but I want to ask you, did Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he was the world's most foremost bodybuilder, did he know the basics about nutrition that you're talking about, and how much more successful or how much quicker could he have been successful if he had known what you know now?
You want me to answer that now or after the break?
Well, give us a little taste, a little appetizer.
Arnold knew about nutrition. Arnold drank raw milk. He interacted with Rio Blair, who was a bodybuilding pioneer in nutrition at that time. But Arnold's major size came with drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's an appetizer. We'll hold that thought. We'll be back with Randy Roach in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. I don't know how many book publishers who would publish a book now and put Arnold Schwarzenegger on the cover.
I did.
But Randy did. Randy Roach in conversation this morning with Randy Roach. How do you like to describe yourself, Randy, when people ask, well, who's Randy Roach anyway? You say?
I'm a trainer and an author. I used to be a computer programmer by trade for many years. But when I lost my eyesight, I shifted primarily to writing and training.
But in terms of your passions, it's not only bodybuilding, and you're regarded as a one of the foremost authorities on bodybuilding, but your real passion, it seems to me, is in the whole area of nutrition for the average person. And I keep saying this is not a session, a clinic for bodybuilders. This is about how the everyday person should eat.
Yeah, I think that there isn't as much difference between bodybuilding diet and the general public, other than the bodybuilder would eat more.
In other words, a bodybuilder, if you were into bodybuilding, you should just eat what you would eat if you weren't a bodybuilder. You just would eat more of it. Randy, you have a second book. I refer to the book. Let me just go there for just a moment. You have a second book, a second edition coming out of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, and you have Arnold on the cover for a couple of reasons.
Well, that second volume has bylines called The Pumping Iron Years, Nautilus Emerges. It's about the 1970s. And Arnold was 1970s bodybuilding. Whether you like him or you don't like him, it doesn't matter. He was pumping iron in those pumping iron years. And he's the one of them that helped elevate bodybuilding to the forefront through the moving pumping iron and his movie career. And there are other factors at play with the rise of the fitness boom. Timing was very, very crucial at that period. The nutrition of the 1970s was still very much akin to the 1960s and 50s and the decades previous. The big, big change really hit hard in the 1980s, and that's where the third volume will pick up. And those bylines will be the rise and fall of modern bodybuilding and the great challenge to its nutritional legacy, because
okay,
bodybuilding had a good legacy.
But let's focus on the area of Arnold nutrition. There are areas of Arnold Schwarzenegger's life that we didn't talk about, and we'll just park those over on the side for now. But what you're saying just before the break, you hinted at it, that at least when it comes to bodybuilding and the way we all should live, Arnold knew a thing or two about this very important subject of nutrition.
Yeah, when he's in Germany, they ate a whole lot. They drank a lot of beer. They ate a lot of food. But Arnold was, he doesn't deny it, he's taking steroids at a very young age. But when he came to America and he found that he had to take his body fat levels down. See, in bodybuilding, where it can part from health is when you go over into competition and you have to strip all the body fat off. That's just not a healthy way, regardless of how you approach it, drugs or natural. But Arnold, in order to do that, to take the fat off, what Arnold was taught was to reduce the carbohydrates. And Arnold, even writing in the 80s, at a very difficult time in 1985, that was a terrible time to be writing about bodybuilding nutrition because the politics were crazy and the hysteria about fat was at a peak. But he told the truth as to what he did and thought, okay, some people might want to try this. But he learned a lot from Rio H. Blair, who came out of Chicago in the 50s and came to California and set up shop as a nutritional expert in bodybuilding and to the stars. He was a nutritional expert to the stars. Remember Bobby Riggs and Liberace and a lot of the movie stars. And Arnold learned from him and learned from others and on his own. But again, what was driving 1970s bodybuilding in terms of the size and sheer look they had was anabolic steroids.
Okay, now we're focusing a lot on bodybuilding, and I wonder if we can just switch gears a little and just switch the focus a little to the average person who's listening to this. Okay, why do I need to know what a bodybuilder should be eating? I want to know what the average person should be eating to stay healthy. Well, can you address, 1, 2, 3, the biggest misconceptions we have right now, Randy Roach, about what we should be eating and the results that we're getting from not understanding what good food really is?
The biggest misconception now is to don't eat any fats, any animal fats. If you want to learn anything from bodybuilding, you want to look at least the leanest guys. They know how to take body fat off, and it was to reduce the carbohydrates to control insulin. They ate proteins, they ate fats, and many of them to keep their weight moderate through the year, kept those carbohydrates under control. And because those were insulin is the thing that they have to control, and it's carbohydrates that invoke the release of insulin. Insulin's a storage hormone.
I found it interesting that you referred to the hysteria about fat in the 80s. I thought it was now that we're having that hysteria. I mean, try to pick up anything in the store that doesn't have some kind of reference to fat and trying to convince you that low diet, as Pam said earlier, is the way to go. Is that the biggest misconception right now, that we should avoid food with fat in it?
It's been the misconception since early 80s. I was reading it at the time. I was following nutrition from the late 70s. I bought into it. I thought, why would they lie to us? These are smart men of science. okay, it drove me to become a vegan for 4.5 years, but I remember the headlines, cholesterol will kill you. All those things, it was constant in all the mainstream media, and finally, it was that hysteria that broke through the barriers of the bodybuilding, because for years, it was starting to surface a bit in the 70s and the 60s, the cholesterol issue was being talked about, but it reached a fever peak in the 80s, and finally, the bodybuilding diets changed.
Now, Randy, can you talk about your personal experience working with people who come to you who are, you know, fitness-oriented, and they've been following a high-protein, low-fat diet, which is very, very pervasive in the fitness industry?
When I get them to go to eating meat, milk, and eggs, and primarily most of them will drink their milk and eat their eggs raw. Like a lot of people throw their eggs in milkshakes and stuff like that. But when they switch to doing a lot of milk, which has a lot of fat, and the eggs bring a lot of fat, and the meat brings a lot of fat, their bodies change dramatically. The ones, I train a lot of people, your body will train according to its genetics. But the ones who will change dramatically will be the ones who incorporate the nutritional changes as well, especially with the ones who do not have the great genetics. That's where diet is even that much more important.
So to the average person who's hearing this and trying to figure out what your message is and what you just said, are you saying eat more meat, drink more milk, and have more eggs?
I'm saying to eat more quality meats, grass-fed meat, raw milk if you can get it, pastured eggs. You do not have to eliminate all your carbohydrates, but they have to be minimized and controlled. Some fruits and vegetables. This whole notion of taking 9, 10, 12 servings of fruits and vegetables is basically historically unprecedented because we could only eat what was indigenous and seasonal to us all through history. We didn't have this smorgasbord of tropical fruits 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Well, again, what you're talking about is heresy in some people's minds. Are you saying eat fewer vegetables?
I'm saying we never ate that many through history. We couldn't. We just didn't have the opportunity.
We didn't have greenhouses during our last ice age, Andy.
Yeah, the way we eat today has no historical precedence whatsoever. So, and plus, the fruits and vegetables grown today, they have so many applications of sprays, even organic. You can't get away from the amount of sprays. Like the argument with meat so full of hormones, but you can probably produce a cleaner animal and cleaner animal products. I'm not saying absolutely pristine, but cleaner than much of the fruits and vegetables. Even the organic farmers in terms of develop organic fruits will tell you they still have to use sometimes some applications of some chemicals, or they just won't have a crop.
Randy, I'm thinking when you're talking about fruits and vegetables and what a craze, are we as hysterical about having fruits and vegetables today as that anti-fat hysteria that you're talking about in the 80s? I'm thinking near Exeter, Ontario, to the north of us, we have a greenhouse up there, which is like the size almost of an entire farm. There's a pepper greenhouse near Dresden. I mean, fruits and vegetables are, you know, if you listen to the ads today, straight from God, and they'll cure all your health issues. You're saying that you yourself, like Pam, call yourself a recovering vegetarian?
Yeah, I think the fruits and vegetables today aren't from God. They're from technology. And look, a lot of these guys are doing this because of supply and demand. The public has been indoctrinated to believe they have to have it, so industry wants to comply and make it available, and they want to make it as cheap as possible. And we have, I would say, a lot of fruits that probably weren't even around through history. And again, you have to be careful with fruits playing with the blood sugar. And I ate a lot, yeah, in the 80s when I became a vegan, I had a lot of fruits and vegetables, and I had a terrible time with them because I could hardly digest, especially the vegetables.
Well, I know that there are some who are hearing you who think that your brains are in your biceps. I mean, this is heresy to some people. We have to take a short break, Randy. So much appreciate you joining us for the hour. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back to rock the boat some more with Pam Killeen and Randy Roach. And we want to stress, the lines are open. If you want to call in, agree, disagree, whatever, it doesn't matter. We would just love to hear from you. Stay cool. We'll be back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
If you'd like to join the conversation, you can email londontoday@cjbk.com or call 519-643-1290.
All the things we talk about during commercial breaks. We're in conversation with Randy Roach this morning, who lives just down the highway in Waterloo. By the way, Randy, is Rim going to survive?
I don't know. I hope so. They're only about a baseball throw from me.
Wow.
Well, right up in there, the neck of the woods.
Well, let's hope they do survive. They have some 9,000 people working for them. Now, during the commercial break, Pam Colleen was telling me that you want to write a book called Planet Bullshit?
Yeah, she told me I can't say that on the air, though.
No, you can't, but I can, you see.
Oh, okay.
Planet Bullshit, what's that going to be about?
Well, to give you a little example, you've said a couple times what I'm saying in this heresy. It's actually not as hectic now as it was, say, 15 years ago. I think there's a good chunk of mainstream academia in the nutrition field are finally pulling their heads up from below their belt lines and realize they dropped the ball and they're trying to bow out of it. But they're now surrounded by all the corporate politics that have been built up around the lie. And it's a big industry. The carbohydrate industry is huge. And much of what we're told about nutrition and everything else is BS.
But Randy, when we talk about carbohydrates, let's get very, very specific here. I mean, it's this consumption of all sorts of fruits, fruit drinks, energy drinks, Gatorades. All of these drinks are delivering a ton of sugar into not just adults, but children.
Yeah, it's those drinks. It's pretzels, chips, and rice cakes, and just like a 70, 80% carbohydrate diet is crazy. And even in the early 90s, even in bodybuilding, they were trying to go for an insane zero-fat diet, which was impossible, but they were trying for it. And they realized, finally, they didn't wait for any science. The bodybuilders themselves realized this isn't working.
Now, I see a lot of results from a zero-fat or a low-fat diet. And remember, low-fat historically means a diet low in animal fats. And what I see when people are eating low-fat diets is tons of depression, fatigue, and anxiety, sleep problems, mood disorders in general, and addiction. So, you know, what happens, Randy, when you see these people who show up at your office and, you know, they're terribly sick, terribly moody, and you start putting them on animal fats?
I don't get a lot of people that are terribly sick. Moody, perhaps, sometimes, but they might say no worse than me. But it's, the low-fat diet, it got away with things because you will lose fat on it. Because the body, when you eat lean animal products, the body will strip body fat off you to process that meat, but it's degenerative, right?
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, it starts to play. Like, okay, you eat a piece of low-fat chicken or low-fat meat. Okay, you don't die the next day. It's a long-term process of degeneration, and then people then start to feel down and bad and fatigued and weak, and that's when they'll notice the difference, when they just start putting fats in their diets. I have a couple of clients just recently, just by the addition of the raw milk and putting more eggs in the diets, feel the impact of how they feel.
Roger, for those who are hearing this, and they simply don't believe you, they're saying, wait a minute, I believe in low fat. You're saying eat more fat, eat more meat, drink more milk, raw milk if you can, have three eggs with your bacon for breakfast, and you will get healthier. Can you point to a person or a situation where they are living out, that where they are living proof of what you're saying?
Well, academia was just praying for Robert Atkins to die of a heart attack. Unfortunately for them, he slipped and hit his head at 72 because he just thumbed his nose in their face all through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, defying what they were saying about low fat, eating his bacon and eggs, and he was perfectly healthy, but he died because he slipped and fell and hit his head. Look at what I am saying is to have an artificially, our diets, low-fat diets, they are artificial. They don't occur in nature. They have no historical precedence. You have to take meats and they're trimming all the fat out, trying to raise cows in a certain way that they have lean meat or chickens that they have, stripping all the fat off and skim milk, egg whites. This diet did not occur in history. And when you artificially lower the fat contents specifically on animal products, you will accelerate the aging process in your body because the body has to strip the nutrition out of your cells to process that protein. And we saw a little bit of this in third world countries when we brought them skim milk powders because of kwashiorkor, vitamin A deficiency, protein deficiency. And when we fed them the stripped down milk protein powder, it threw a number of them immediately into vitamin A deficient blindness because the body had to strip the vitamin A that would have been in the milk that wasn't in the milk powder out of it, their little livers, to process the protein, and they went into vitamin A deficient blindness. And they had to remedy it with vitamin A supplementation.
Now, I'm glad you brought up protein powders because they're one of my biggest pet peeves. I get all of my students off of the protein powders, and I know you used to sell them, Randy, and you and I are on the same page with regards to our dislike for these protein powders.
The protein powders mainly came from industrial waste. Like, even whey protein was a biological hazard at the time. Not that whey is bad, but throwing it into the water, I think, disrupted the oxygen content. But soy protein was an industrial product. For the first 50 years of the 20th century, soy wasn't even considered as a food product. It was an industrial product. They used it for the grease and paints. And they used to dump the meal back into the soil or feed it to the animals, which they should not have been doing. But then they got the bright idea, let's feed it to the people. And it was brought into the bodybuilding industry in 1950 by Irvin Johnson. I mentioned earlier in the show Rio H. Blair. That is Irvin Johnson. He changed his name in the early 1960s, but he quickly discarded protein powders from the soy base and went to milk and egg. But and he made a lot of money and a lot of success selling his milk and egg protein, but he insisted people reconstitute it with raw eggs and raw cream and raw milk. But again, these powders have been stripped from all their synergists and cofactors. Usually the natural vitamin A has been destroyed and the mineral content has been disrupted. And when you're just eating this pure form of protein powder, the body has to use its own resources to process assimilate it. 100 years ago, Bernard McFadden, who was considered one of the fathers of physical culture, he said you're better off to not eat anything than to eat white bread, along the same principle that the white bread, it was just the pure starch or the endosperm of the grain, the germ, and fiber have been stripped away, so you just have this pure carbohydrate without the B vitamins, the minerals, the essential fatty acids that were in the germ. So the body has to strip off its own resources to process this high concentration of starch. Long-term, degenerative, accelerates the aging.
Randy, let's make your list. You just said, what I heard you say at least is, never, ever eat white bread. Did you say that?
No, I wouldn't eat white bread. I mean, once in a while, sure, it's not going to kill you, but it's become the staple of many families' diets. So it's just potato chips and corn chips and these processed, refined, high concentrations of starchy carbohydrates, which will basically slowly degenerate you. You'll wonder why you're 40 and you have the arthritis, fibromyalgia, you know, your pancreas is fatiguing, you know, all these things because, we are resilient. We do. Some people are much more resilient than others. I lasted 4.5 years as a vegetarian. Pam lasted 9. Lear, Keith lasted 20. Some people last a year and they have to get off.
Okay, right there. Let me just get a snapshot for somebody who's just tuned in. What you call yourself is a recovering vegetarian. You're saying eat more meat. Let's have a Reader's Digest version of everything you're saying in terms of what foods we should be switching away from and what foods we should be switching to.
I think we should be reducing the amount of starchy refined carbohydrates tremendously. We should bring down the amounts of fruits and vegetables and eat them more seasonally. We should increase the amount of high-quality protein fats, proteins with their natural fats. And there should be a bigger campaign to basically redefine the milk industry and get more cottage industry and raw milk and raw milk products available to people who want them. And to stop this scaremongering, because that's all it is political scaremongering going on even at the highest level. I call them medical politicians. These are doctors holding these positions that are perpetrating this scaremongering as well. And the diet should be constituted along those lines.
How much meat a day? I can hear the callers asking this morning.
I think if you listen to people, have to go back and learn how to listen to their body, and their body will tell. I've met so many people who come in and say they're so afraid to eat meat, but they say, "Man, I'm just craving for it." Then eat it. Your body's telling you, and when you've had enough, it'll tell you to stop.
Yeah, I tell people 3 square meals because when we, you know, before World War II, when we ate 3 square meals, we were much, much healthier than we are now, and we were eating about, you know, the size of the back of your hand as a portion of protein, 3 times a day. That's essentially what I teach people.
I have a son who loves to barbecue, and when he barbecues, I mean, he serves us up steaks. I just laugh because they cover almost the whole plate. Is that healthy, Randy?
I can't eat that much meat. Like Pam, with the size Pam is talking about, is more actually along the lines. Now, as a bodybuilder, I can eat a lot. I mean, I will eat more often, but I won't sit down and eat a huge steak, it just doesn't...
When you have adequate amounts of saturated fat in your diet, you don't overeat. That's the nice thing about having adequate amounts of saturated fat or animal fats in your diet, is that it satisfies your appetite. You're sated. You feel satiety. You know, you feel good. You won't overeat if you eat enough animal fat.
Yeah, a lot of people today are barbecuing these lean steaks and putting sugar sauces on them and troughing it down, because it's the sugar sauces that they're actually craving too. So.
Let me ask you, how receptive people, first of all, in the bodybuilding world, and then we'll talk about the general population, are to what you're saying. You're saying cut down on those carbs and don't be scared to eat more meat, drink more milk, and have more eggs. Are they listening, Randy?
Oh, for sure. A lot of them never left it. You got to remember, that's where we were 50, 60, 70 years ago. That was the mainstream staple bodybuilding diet right up until 1980. I got the books. I got the books that were written a year apart by the same author, where they switched gears to go from old school bodybuilding nutrition to the new school paradigm. And a lot of guys are still alive and remember it. And a lot of I have a friend, Josh Trentini, who is a natural Mr. USA, and they see the results. He's eating a lot of raw milk and eggs, and Josh and I do some meat raw, but just the fact that he drinks sometimes up to a gallon of raw milk a day and a dozen raw eggs a day, and the muscle he's gained. And in bodybuilding, the bottom line is muscle. If you show them you can build muscle, they'll eat... that bullshit.
Oh, he said it.
He gave me the way.
Okay, some kind of police are going to come around and arrest you, Randy, but before they do, we have to take a short break. When we come back, when I watch ABC's Evening News and I see every commercial is for drugs, and the first 30 seconds is about what it can do for you, and then the next, it seems like a minute and a half, your eyes pop out of your head, your brain can explode, your liver's going to fall down into your shoes. I mean, all the warnings. I'm going, where are we going taking all these drugs? I want to ask you about that when we come back in just a moment. Here on London Today on News Talk 1290, CJBK.
If you...
In conversation with Randy Roach, who comes from the world of bodybuilding, but his passion is nutrition. Randy, we have about 5 minutes left, and I always, in these programs... aim not just to entertain folks and to educate them, but to have them come away from a conversation with a short list, a manageable list, of things that they can do with the information they have learned. And we're talking, of course, after our discussion this hour about nutrition, about things that we can all do when we have lunch today, and we're about an hour from lunchtime, what choices they can make that are going to lead to better health. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to realize in this country, and especially in the U.S., we have a healthcare crisis the likes of which we can never have imagined, whether it's in the area of diabetes or obesity or just a whole variety of areas where we have a healthcare crisis, each one on their own. And on top of that, because of all the pills we take and all the costs involved in diseases like diabetes, we have a financial crisis. Healthcare costs are threatening to bankrupt this province, this country. Randy, let me just ask you to give us your wisdom on where we are and the direction we're headed if we don't soon take a new, healthier direction.
Probably extinct. My opinion was the same as Dr. Weston Price and Dr. Francis Pottinger 70 years ago when they realized that the way we've compromised our food, they did it on purpose in studies with animals. And especially for Dr. Francis Pottinger, and realized that the animals became infertile. And they basically predicted the infertility we have today. And that's basically one of the major side effects of our diets today, not to mention the myriad of drugs that we've never seen this amount of drugs and chemicals go into our bodies. And just quickly, with what you said, those commercials with the drugs, and you see all those side effects listed, they have to do that, because when you're now close to the number one killer, people dying to a fatal reaction to drugs, they have a lot of lawsuits on their hands. So they have to put these disclaimers out there because the amount of litigation that's going on.
Oh, absolutely. I understand that. They're not putting them on there just to be nice. They're putting them on there because they have a gun to their head. If they don't, they'll get into a lot of legal doo-doo. Are you sort of the bugler of the apocalypse when it comes to the state of our health and where we're going if we don't soon make a major correction?
I wouldn't just call myself the bugler. I just pointing out the way we're eating now. People, you see people want to be happy, and you can't be happy when you're physically sick. And when you're physically sick, and it's often you're emotionally sick because they all tied in together. And you can really do a lot by dropping back. Just drop back and punt. Relook at everything in terms of your diet. Take your time. Educate yourself. Just don't ask somebody, make a diet for me. Because then they're just following a template, they'll get bored and they quit. They have to learn why they're doing it.
Well, Pam says such outrageous things as, for example, Mr. Hudak is talking about chain gangs for our prisoners. Pam Kalina is suggesting if we really wanted to see our inmate population find the straight and narrow path, the best thing, the most constructive and the most efficient thing we could do is get them on a good diet.
Yeah, not just that. They should be spending their time learning about how to create a good diet, you know, even maybe raise them, put them on, get them like some cattle in there in gardens, and they can create seasonal indigenous foods in their best states. And they actually rehabilitate, heal themselves physically, intellectually, emotionally. I agree.
Right. When you're throwing off your blood sugar levels and starving your brain at the same time, I mean, you're going to feel anger, rage. You're going to have irrational behavior. You can't make a good decision. So we need to make sure that people who have committed crimes, that we rehabilitate them, not just through talk therapy, but through nutrition as well.
And the drugs, you know, a lot of these guys have to be brought off the drugs.
Well, I would really love if you could, one of my pet peeves is people who text while they're on the 401. Maybe they're just eating too many low-fat yogurts.
A lot of them are killing themselves doing it, too.
Well, sure, in two ways, both nutritionally and the danger on the highway. Okay, just a couple of moments left. Randy, your passion as you head into the next few years of your life, what's your message to the world in the next minute?
My message will be probably through my books and radio interviews in terms of not just bodybuilding, but the nutrition. How it was a good thing in bodybuilding at one time, and it has to be brought back, not just in bodybuilding, but through the mainstream, more common sense in what we put in our mouths. And it's going to be tough because there's so much money pushing the processed food industry, and everybody wants that quick, fast way, and they think it's the magic way, and they have to be educated. It's not the magic way.
Let me ask you to comment on Pam's advice. When you go to a grocery store, if it's not against the wall, don't buy it. That whole center area, forget it. The meat, the milk, the eggs, think of it. All those things that are against the outside wall of your grocery store, that's where you want to go, and just avoid that whole processed food section, which makes up the majority of the grocery store.
Yeah, get your toilet paper from the middle rolls and get your food from the outer rolls, or better yet, get it out of farmers market, where you can actually get to know the farmers and trust what they're growing or raising, and you know, you'd be far better off.
That's definitely the gold standard. You want to be able to get to know your farmer, make sure the animals are outside on pasture, and enjoy those nutrient dense foods as much as you can.
Do you believe, as Pam does, Randy, that we are sicker, we are fatter, and we are more depressed than ever?
Oh, I would say for sure. I think mainstream is even admitting that the kids being born today for the first time in a while are weaker and sicker and have a less opportunity in terms of health, because they're right off the bat, they're just rammed with I don't know how many inoculations and, you know.
Well, they're malnourished in the womb, even.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm
surprised a lot of the mothers, if they can get pregnant, and they do get pregnant, a lot of these, they're just barely pregnant, and the child suffers through those gestational periods. And that's where, when they do studies, they make sure when they do these nutritional studies, they don't bring these subjects to gestations, because it will really reveal the inadequacies of process.
Randy, quickly, website?
RandyRoach.ca.
Okay, you got another book coming out?
Yes, this fall, Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, Volume 2. It's probably about 640 pages. It's a big one.
And it's not just bodybuilders who should read it?
The first one's more for laymen because of the nutritional, but I'd have to admit the second volume is primarily for the fitness industry and the bodybuilding community.
Okay, and the one thing people should not have for lunch today should be?
Chips, pop. Stay away from it.
There we go.
Muffins will put you there. If you want to be sleeping by 2 o'clock, go eat a muffin.
Randy, it's been a pleasure. It's been a hoot, and I thank you.
Thank you, Andy.
Randy Roach, just down the highway in the 401. Anything else we need to add about Pam Kalina and what's your agenda the next while?
I'm teaching my nutrition boot camp this October. I've got it on my website, pamkalina.com, under upcoming events.
Remind us of your two books.
My first book, The Great Bird Flu Hoax, that I wrote with Dr. Mercola, and my newest book is Addiction, The Hidden Epidemic.
And it is quite a read, folks. Thank you for joining us. It's been a lively hour. Thank you so much. Hands on the wheel, eyes on the road. You know the drill. Please hang up and drive so you arrive alive. And we can chat again tomorrow morning at 9. Do stay cool today. The mercury expected to go to about 37. We talked to a roofer earlier this morning. On the roof, it was 41. See you tomorrow morning at 9. Right here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.